let's retrace our steps. We began with the Mishnah, and it was pointed out by Jeremy, by Michael, right?
Jeremy.
I was right. Okay, it was pointed out by Jeremy that Moshe's reception of the Torah at Sinai was a prophetic revelation in front of the masses, and that led us to a discussion of what is prophecy. And there were all kinds of suggestions made about prophecy being what were the suggestions? One sees different understandings of what prophecy is, and now that brings us to the point of understanding what prophecy is. We're all in agreement that Avraham Avinu, Avraham the patriarch, was an exceptionally kind person, right?
Yep.
It's basically world history. And the Torah definitely tells us that. We attest to that. We start our prayers. We introduce ourselves to God. What do we say the first thing in Shemona Esrei? Baruch Atah Hashem Elokeinu v'Elokei Avoseinu. Hashem, you're the God of our forefathers, the God of Avraham. So obviously Avraham holds a very high place up there, right? We begin by introducing ourselves. I'm his grandson. You know me, right? I'm coming to you. I'm not coming. I'm not inventing this on my own. I'm a continuation. I'm a link in a chain that starts all the way back with Avraham. Now, what was Avraham told? What was Avraham's 10th test? Avraham was told by God, what, Ariel?
To sacrifice his son.
To take up his son on Mount Moriah and sacrifice him.
Okay,
now, I want to understand something. Remind me, what's your name? Howard. I'll get it. Howard. If there were any room for Avraham Avinu to doubt whether it was God talking to him, or maybe it was a hallucination, maybe it was on a high, maybe it was a dream, could we admire Avram for agreeing to take his son up that mountain?
No.
No, right? So Maimonides writes, the Rambam writes, when Avram at the mountaintop says, "Behav Hashem Yira'eh," from this mountain for eternity people will know that God is seen, what Avram was saying is that from the fact that I was willing to do this, God, and then you intervened and told me not to do this, from that fact, all future generations will know that a vision of prophecy is a vision of utmost clarity. It will be recognized by humanity that God does appear to human beings and they know that he's talking to them. Now, let's think about it for a minute. Avram is, everyone, the whole world knows that he's kind. What do you think Avram was busy doing in those days? When the pagan cultures were telling people to burn their kids to the different idols, what was Avram telling them? Don't burn your kids. Don't sacrifice your kids. Right? That's what Avram was doing. He was telling them, this is all ridiculous. You can't do that. And then after he spent his life doing that, God appears and tells him, Avram, take your son, take him up that mountaintop, and sacrifice him to me. Now, if I were Avram, what would I think? God, I'm not sure this is such a good idea, right? You told me he's the future. He's the future of humanity. This son is going to lead the Jewish people. Now you're telling me to take him up. What will the world say? And let's make this test one notch more difficult. When God asks Avram, God uses a word which has very deep connotations. God tells Avram, who remembers, what did God say? Kach na et bincha. What does the word na mean in Tanakh? Please. Who said please? What does that mean? Imagine I tell you, could you please pass me the cup? What am I indicating when I say please? I'm saying it's a request. You could agree, you could not agree. So wait a second, wait. God tells him, please do this. And Avram, what does Avram do? We know what Avram does. He wakes up early in the morning and he goes ahead and he moves forward on it. Now, doesn't that bother you a little bit?
Isn't it more like he's emphasizing that like it's important that you do it?
Oh.
Yeah, I don't think it's such a...
It's not a...
Please.
Yeah.
What?
I don't see it as a request to say please. I just see it as more as a polite way of...
To show importance.
Yeah, I beseech you.
So then let's leave that.
But you could have just taken the please out and the same thing.
So he's What he's referring to is a rule that the Malbim says. The Malbim says a rule. When you learn, he says, if you could omit a word and you lack nothing in your understanding, then you don't understand the word. So they're saying it adds politeness. It's a nicer way to talk. Now, their point is well taken, because God always speaks politely. You'll notice that God never begins a conversation with what he wants. God always begins with small talk. God begins by saying, Adam, where are you? Ayeka. What do you mean, where am I? God knows exactly where he is. God begins with small talk. When God even appears to Moshe Rabbeinu, to Moses, God begins by telling him, I'm the God of your forefathers. He introduces himself. God always begins with small talk. God doesn't just show up on the scene and say, now do this. No, it's not a polite way to behave. So their point is well taken. If it bothers you, then in a few weeks we will get to the Mishnah that deals with this, and we will discuss it.
Wouldn't it be a test if you said no? Because it wouldn't have been much of a test, because it would have become a commandment.
What you're saying is exactly what the Ran, there was once a great rabbi who led all the Jewish people, lived about 700 years ago. His name was Rav Nissim, Rabbeinu Nissim. And he says exactly what you're saying. He has a whole long essay on it, explaining the word na in God's request, and explaining exactly what you're saying, that was the test. Not everyone agrees with it. Your friends who don't like this interpretation have other commentaries who learn like them. But what you're saying is what the Ran says. What you're saying, Rav Nissim says.
You're saying that he never just comes out straight and tells someone, he'll ask nicely, and so it doesn't really matter if it's a test, because then everything else is a test.
No. God sometimes tells us what to do, and God sometimes requests that we do things. But that's a discussion I didn't want to enter. I want to go back a step. Yeah?
Well, that's what they mean to say, if your mom says, please go get me a glass of water, of course you're going to do it. So God says to you, please go sacrifice your son, you can jump up to do it because
it's God. The rest of comes right after Abraham was had his whole dialogue with God about if she's still or not.
Okay, but water is a bit different to creating a son.
I want us to go one more step. But in order to take that step, I need to review some names. What's your name?
Jordan.
Chaim. Okay. Chaim. Why don't I hear? Okay. Chaim. Goldman?
That's the one.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Very polite,
yeah. I want us to conclude with one more thought. Let's play a game together. Everyone together. It's going to seem silly, but in the end, I think you'll all marvel at the conclusion. So play along with me. Okay? Could everyone point at a light bulb in the room? Could everyone point at the blackboard? That board. Whiteboard. Oh, sorry. Okay, right. Whiteboard. I'm not from that generation. Okay. Point with your fingers, please, guys. Could everyone point at Chaim? Okay. And now, on the next one, point with a finger and then hold the position. Could everyone point at themselves? That's very interesting.
Wow.
Very interesting. Okay. Wait, guys. Where do you point to when you point to yourself?
Is this all RA capital?
Your head, your brain,
face.
But then what defines you?
Always point is heart.
This is what defines you, because if you get a heart
transplant,
is it yourself? Is it yourself?
Yeah,
always
pushing it.
Yeah.
I win.
Who you mean?
That's a good point.
Again.
Think for a minute. When we speak about life, so earlier generations used to think you could capture life in a box. When a person was getting sick, they'd close all the windows in the room so that his life wouldn't leave him. They tried putting him in a box and closing the box so that life wouldn't leave him. They couldn't figure out where life begins. We're about to discuss God in prophecy, but before we discuss something so external to ourselves, let's look back at ourselves. You guys, how old is everyone here? About 18, right?
19.
Okay, so I don't know if in your time, my time, there was a cartoon where there was this big body and a little mind inside that was running the robot. He had a... I don't know what it was called. If you think about it for a second, with what do we see? With what do we hear? Is it our ears that hear? So we could say, no, the physical ear hears, and then the mind sends neurotransmitters, and then it synthesizes the information, and then we hear. But what is life? Where does life begin? What is doing the thinking, the hearing, every process that we're doing? So we say that's the neshama, right? The neshama is life. Life is not about a mind. All of science can't figure out if a person's dying, where does life go? What's the battery that keeps life going and then stops? So we could mimic the life process. We could create, we could clone, we could do in vitro fertilization, we could do a lot of things. We can mimic the process, but we don't understand the process. All of science has yet to figure out what is this neshama. And those of you who follow the scientific works, in the last decade, most scientists have started discussing the spiritual aspect of science. You guys familiar with that? That there's a spiritual realm in science too. They're talking about that. As far as life, where does life? What is life? If we think about it, ask any person to define what is it within him that is life. What is the neshama?
The soul.
What is that?
Your inner identity.
Remind me. What do you want to be called?
Viri.
What is life?
Life is like. Well, I think life really starts like when you're in the womb, and your mother's like feeding you through the umbilical cord. Like
right, but what is, I'm saying right now, you're living, you're talking.
Living and breathing.
What about you is life? What is that battery that gives you the capacity to do everything you're doing? Your moach. Well, then why, when a person's dead, does he stop talking? His moach is still there. Howard,
it's how like the moach.
Yeah, but then why does it stop when a person is dead?
Because you give that up. It's like your last,
Remind me your name.
Daniel.
Yeah.
Last like everything around you, it's like a wall to live. Like you wake up, you can choose to like look at the day being nice, even if it's bad. Like you can say it's a good day kind of thing. And like as soon as you start giving up on all that,
right, but I'm asking a simple question. What is that battery that keeps us moving? What changes between life and death? The heart stops pumping. We could keep the heart pumping today.
Pumping.
We could keep the heart going. How come a person's dead?
Well, the neshama leaves our body.
Oh, so you're saying our neshama leaves our body, but they're not saying that. So I want to hear what you guys are thinking.
Okay, science is not religion, though, as well. Are you saying that religion has died?
Who's not saying that?
I'm not sure. No one's saying that yet.
He said it's when you're showing you. Then you said they're not saying that.
I'm saying yeah. No one else said that until now.
Okay.
Are you saying that Judaism has the answer to this, or that you have the answer?
The answer to this one.
I didn't say I have any answer. I asked the question. I'm still asking questions. It's always easier to ask questions. I'm trying to explain a totally different concept. I'm not trying to explain the neshama in life. But when we understand that there is the life within us is not the physical eye, it's not the physical mind, it's not the physical spine, but rather these are all tools which are functioning on behalf of what we call the neshama. Once we understand that concept, then the next step is to understand what is prophecy. Because prophecy is a situation where the neshama connects to Hashem. The eye, the naked eye, does not see God. It's not, I don't see a physical. It's my neshama that sees something.
You're saying dream, like a dream.
I did not say dream. But a dream is a good example.
Alternative state of consciousness.
Oh, so the question is, where does a dream take place? This is a discussion among the commentaries.
Delta ways.
It's true.
This is a discussion among the commentaries. How comparable is prophecy to a dream? Okay, so we open the concept. It's time to conclude. I try to conclude on time, but gentlemen, let's begin on time. There's Lachim tomorrow, 9:15 in the Bet Midrash. Please write your names on top of the papers and hand them in. What?
I'll go to my friend.